Disociatīvā fūga. Sarunas par kino. Katru otro sestdienu, trijos. Sveicināti raidījumā Disociatīvā fūga. Šī gada aprīlī kinoteātrī Kino Bize norisinās Rīgas pasaules filmu festivāls, un tā īpašais viesis ir slavenais amerikāņu cinema verité dokumentārā kino režisors un Hārvardas universitātes profesors Ross McElvies, kurš iepriekš Latvijā viesojās 1990. Gadā īsi pirms Padomju Savienības sabrukuma. Viņa filma Šermana marš, meditācija par romantiskas mīlestības iespējamību dienvidos atomieroču masu izplatības laikmatā, ir viens no ietekmīgākajiem un nozīmīgākajiem dokumentārā kino darbiem pasaulē. Šī filma ir īpaša arī ar to, ka dažkārt iesprūstot radošā procesā filmas taisīšanā, bieži ieteikums ir paskaties Šermana maršu, un viss atkal šķiet iespējams, jo režisors būdams viens ar kameru un skaņas ierakstītāju, tik brīvi, radoši un intelektuāli smalki drēfēs starp lielām un personīgām tēmām. Ross McElvies ir mans viesis raidījumā Disociatīvā fūga. Labvakar, Ross McElvie.
Good evening.
I have a big honor to talk with you here in Radio Naba Studio about your journey in the art of filmmaking and your view on art and life in your movies and especially about your techniques and approaches to filmmaking. In the beginning, when and how you understood you will make documentaries, cinema verite films?
I think the way I made that decision was the way that most young people make their decisions. They see something that really has a big impact on them. And I remember when I was in college, I saw two films, one by an American filmmaker named Fred Wiseman. And I was so amazed at this way of making films where there was no interviewing, there was no direct interviewing, there was no evidence of the filmmaker being part of what was going on. Basically, it was only what was happening in front of the camera. And Wiseman, Fred Wiseman, has made many films in that that same style for his entire career, but it was a very pure form of filmmaking, and I think it had a big impact on me. The other film I saw was by a filmmaker named Richard Leacock, also American, who made a film about a primary election in the U.S. between John Kennedy and Hubert Humphrey. The name of the film was Primary, very simple title, but the film itself was also filmed very simply, and again, there was no narration. They were simply filming what was happening behind the scenes, and both films had an impact on me, I think. And so I kept them in the back of my mind. I wasn't a filmmaker. I wasn't in a place where I could start to become a filmmaker, but I knew something like that might be an interesting career path at some point in my life.
How old you were at that time?
Oh, I was 18, 19 years old. Yeah, very
1890. Young. And you was a son of doctors. Your parents was...
Yes. My grandfather, my father, my brother, numerous cousins were all medical doctors. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little bit of an unusual thing to do.
You felt like black sheep?
I was the black sheep.
But tell
Maybe
me...
Maybe I should say a gray sheep, you know, not really that black, but sort of gray.
But tell me, please, about your unique style. How you find this way, how to narrate, how this voiceover?
It's, you know, unfortunately, it's very, very hard to do this in just an audio form because so much of it involves the images that are married with the narration. But basically, I'm filming life with a camera, not scripting it, not directing it, trying to control it. Filming things happening in front of the camera with people I meet or people I know, have known for a long time, maybe family members, something that I'm interested in. I film it, and then I have the filmmaking part of it finished, and then the next step is what you're talking about, is the narration. And I have to go back in my psyche and remember what I was feeling like when I filmed those moments. It's hard to do, but I think all of us have done, looked at a photograph and maybe wondered, what were we thinking at this point in my life when I was, this photograph was taken and I'm in the picture? It's a process of that kind of thinking, of rethinking of what was going on in my life and in the lives of the people I was filming at that moment, in the present tense, not the past tense, but the present mm-hmm. tense. And somehow I could write that down and then begin to experiment with recording it and then putting in the audio with the image. And it's a very difficult process for me. I don't know why, because it's not complicated writing, but the writing is very simple. The end result is very simple. The process is difficult and complicated to get to for me.
Mm-hmm. You are completely alone in the edition room.
In the editing, well, in the recording studio, yes. I mean, sometimes they have a sound recordist who's watching the levels and so forth, but otherwise I'm alone, and I've written it myself, and I create the narration. When I'm editing, I often work with another editor or an assistant editor, that's a different process than the narration.
This creative process begins when you start to write your narration?
No, it begins when I shoot the images that mm-hmm. go with the narration. It's a combination of all of those things.
Yeah, how you work with material. I imagine you have so lot of material. How you decide what will go in, what you don't put in the film?
I mean, because of footage that I've already filmed? It's really it's almost like refilming it. I look at the images and I try to rediscover them in a refreshed way. What do the images mean to me now that I'm looking back at them? It's rediscovering them and then choosing. And I think all filmmakers have to do this. You always end up with more footage than you can use for a single film. And that's certainly true for me. But it's what strikes me, what's really interesting about this moment. For instance, in my tobacco film, there's a farmer named Howard McPherson, and I film his life and his going out to the tobacco fields. And I think what struck me most about Howard was his ability to kind of just reflect on his own life and talk about tobacco and what a wonderful thing it's been in his life. And then also this other dimension to him that I discovered by accident is his ability to sing. He sang in a church quartet, and the music was so haunting and so beautiful that I thought, oh, I didn't even know this man did this, and now this is this other dimension. And in fact, his music, his singing, and the singing of his quartet appear 3 or 4 times in this movie I made about tobacco called Bright Leaves.
Mm-hmm. And about people, you, in your film, everyday people becomes a center or as the central subjects. How they are taking you? It's so warm. I see they are willing. How you work with your subjects, with people?
Well, it's, again, what you're not seeing are the people who don't want to be filmed, or the people who think, oh, yes, I'll try it, but then they're not very interesting, and they're not in the movie. So it seems like every single person has a performative quality to their lives, but that's a matter of the editing. You edit out things that didn't work, and you create and keep the people who are interesting on film. And I think with my films, it's partially my approach, I think, because I try to be relaxed and I'm basically just one person with a camera. And there's not a crew of 5 people. It's just me. And so I think that relaxes them a little bit. And just trying to establish a kind of trust, really, as one human being to another, as best you can in that situation. And so it's very different. It's not journalism. It's not TV news type filming, television filming. It's a quieter type of filmmaking that I try to do.
I imagine your family understood this because they used to. You all the time are with the camera, but sometimes are they tired from this? No, stop, please. And then you stop?
Then I stop, yes. If somebody tells me they don't want to be filmed, that's generally it.
I have a question to ask you.
I'm sorry?
Hidden camera.
hidden.
Yeah, no, what do you think about this?
Never, never. Not for me.
Mm-hmm. I also think this is not very interesting because this is stolen material.
That's a good expression. Stolen. It is stolen. But I think, you know, there are places where it works very, very well. I think there's a documentary about Navalny, the Russian activist who was trying to unseat Putin, and he made a documentary about his life in which they recorded the telephone conversation with someone that they suspected had actually poisoned Navalny. Mm-hmm. That person did not know they were being recorded. It was like another version of hidden cameras, hidden tape recorder. And it was very powerful when you hear him say, yes, there were certain things I wish I'd done differently. It might have actually succeeded in killing him, but mm-hmm. I failed. I didn't really do it.
This means you think there are situations where you can use those things.
Exactly, and that mm-hmm. was certainly one of them. It's very powerful.
18 gadus vecais režisors Ross McElvies sāk veidot filmas cinemā veritē tehnikā, kas ir vērojoša dokumentārā kino tehnika bez intervijām vai bez kaut kāds citāds režisora iejaukšanās, iedvesmojoties no Frederika Veismana un Richarda Leacocka darbiem. Ross nāk no ģimenes, kurā tēvs, vectēvs, brālis, brālēni, gandrīz visi ģimenes vīrieši bija ārsti, un viņš bija kā tāda melnā avs ar savu vēlmi darīt dzīvē kaut ko tik iracionālu kā kino. Viņa autobiografiskajās filmās parādās šī tēma, ka tēvam bija ļoti grūti pieņemt viņa izvēli. Tā bija vērtības sadursme starp jauno režisoru un viņa tēvu. Tomēr viņš turpināja veidot filmas un izkopa savu īpašo rokrakstu, savienojot vēsturiskas un sociālpolitiskas tēmas ar savas personīgās dzīves pārdzīvojumiem, sasaistot makro un mikro pasauli ar savdabīgu līmi, pašreflektējošu aizkadra tekstu. Viņš filmē lielākoties savas ģimenes locekļus, turklāt ir klātesošs ar kameru diezgan nepārtraukti. Dažkārt viņiem tas apnīk un viņi lūdz izslēgt kameru, ko Ross uzreiz arī dara. Slēpto kameru viņš neizmantotu nekad, tomēr atceras filmu par Navaļniju, kur tika pielietot tāda kā slēptā mikrofona, tehnika, kas bijis ļoti spēcīgi, un Ross atzīst, ka ir gadījumi, kuros varētu lietot slēpto kameru. Disociatīvā fūga. Sarunas par kino. Katru otro sestdienu, trijos. And what I felt from your films, you can maintain this fragile line between like emotional sadness or and humor. Humor is very close in your films, but also this, and how you keep this balance? How you find this balance?
Don't have a formula. It's just a matter of looking at the film as it progresses in various stages. But you know, comedy and tragedy have been the true poles of theater forever. Certainly, this is Greek playwrights had comedies and also had tragedies, and Shakespeare, the playwright, wrote both comedies and tragedies, and there's some combination of those two things that really makes a complete picture of the human condition. I mean, life is absurd and often cruel, and yet if you don't have a sense of humor, I think it's very difficult to get through life and appreciate what the beauty of life. And so for me, somehow, it's not a formula that I could work out in mathematics and show you, but it's some combination, some equilibrium that occurs between balancing those two things, going back and forth between the sad and the humor.
Yeah. In the film Time Indefinite, there is a sentence where you say, my father would have told me not to think about death, just live. It's a deep recommendation.
Death.
Yeah, only, just live. Yeah.
Yes. Right, only think about life. Yes, well, he was a doctor and a surgeon, actually, and I think he spent every single day dealing with people who might possibly die, and a lot of it depended upon his ability as a surgeon to prevent that from happening, but I think he also really enjoyed life, and he had a sense of humor, and I think it's, you know, pretty common, especially amongst people who have to deal with life and death situations like policemen and soldiers. You know, I'm always amazed by how they seem to have a sense of humor of what they're going through. You know, I'm very interested in what's happening in Ukraine right now, and I hope this is not something we can't talk about, but I always read the articles in the paper about what the soldiers are doing in Ukraine, because I find it so inconceivable that now we're doing this again. It's back to World War I, and yet often the portraits of the soldiers that they render, at least part of the portraits, or there's a sense of black humor about what's going on. That's how they keep surviving.
How Michael Moore told, you have to take sugar to eat bitter,
but
something bitter.
Moore, I wasn't the only one to say that, but yes, they probably did say that somewhere. Yes, I mean, he used a sense of humor to help make the difficult, complex things that he wanted to discuss in his films palatable so that people would take it in and digest it.
You film people you really love, and sometimes death enters into their life in front of camera. And how work with films helps you overcome or cope with death, if it is possible?
It doesn't help you overcome it. It maybe helps you cope with it in a sense. I can't answer that question. I mean, it's too interior. I don't know exactly. For me, it's just important, and I think for you too, to have made a film about, you know, a family, and then one of the members in the family dies. In some cases, it was a father. In my case, in time, indefinite. And that, for everybody, when that happens, I think it's a kind of earth-shaking experience. And then how do I deal with this in film, though, is a very different consideration.
But I think it's very important to talk about this. And when camera stays, you concentrate your thoughts.
I think it's true. Like the conversation I have with my brother in Time Indefinite about the death of my father would not have happened if I had not been filming.
What about ethical guidelines? Do you have some things that you never will do? You told about secret camera, hidden camera.
That's one I would never do. I think almost always, there have been a couple of times when I've violated this, but almost always if people say, stop filming, I stop filming. So that's one thing. And I don't know that I have any other rules. If people don't want to be filmed, I listen to that. Also, I know it's not purely because I have a great ethical center within myself that I have to listen to. It's also, whatever footage I get is not going to be very useful after that point, because they'll be angry and they won't give me anything that's worth filming. So I may as well simply acknowledge what they've asked me not to do, what to do, which is not film.
And how you think about edition process? Sometimes in editing room, you change material a little bit, something cut out, and this gives new meaning. What about this?
Well, I mean, that's true. Editing changes everything. I think Jean-Luc Godard said every edit is a political statement, every single cut. Which is true. It has almost a political effect upon the entire film. And you have to be aware of that as a filmmaker. That's why I like really long shots that go on for a long time, because they don't have an edit every second. I think there's a popular way of editing films now where the edits occur very, very quickly. And I try not to do that in my own films. But I think, nonetheless, there is an ethical process in deciding when a shot ends and when it continues. And you just have to follow some inner compass about how much of this is okay and then when does it become too much.
And do you sometimes show your material to people which are not in your material or not?
Oh, sure, yes.
Showing before? Yes.
Before releasing it, yes, I do, yes.
And what they are telling?
Well, clearly,
this I don't like.
Well, clearly, they've all, the ones, I mean, when this has happened in the past, they've all said, my son was a good example of this. He saw photographic memory, and he said he didn't particularly like certain parts, but I said, well, I can take them out if you really want me to. But he mm-hmm. understood the process of filmmaking. He says, no, keep it in. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I think the other times I've shown it, you know, I think my sister would have liked me not to have used some of the scenes in Sherman's March, but she wanted the film to be successful also. She's a bit of a performer herself.
It's very funny.
She's very funny, and she knows she's very funny. So she didn't tell me I had to keep anything out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw this photographical memory, and I saw Adrian, and during moments of tension and discussion and how he feels, but you told he's saying, okay, in the end. Mm-hmm. Režisors savās filmās spēja saglabāt rauslo robežu starp skumjām un humoru. Humors viņa filmās ir ļoti klātesošs. Ross pats par to saka šādi. Šekspīrs rakstīja gan komēdijas, gan traģēdijas, un ir kaut kāda šo divu lietu kombinācija, kas veido pilnīgu cilvēku stāvokļa ainu. Es gribu teikt, ka dzīve ir absurda un bieži vien nežēlīga, un tomēr, ja tev nav humora izjūtas, manuprāt, ir ļoti grūti izdzīvot un novērtēt dzīves skaistumu. Tā ir kaut kāda kombinācija, kas rodas šo divu lietu līdzsvarošanā turp un atpakaļ starp skumjām un humoru. Ross McElvijs filmē dzīvi, taču dažkārt tajā ievīs nāve, arī tuvinieka nāve. Runājām par to, ka kamera dažreiz var palīdzēt pārdzīvot smagus notikumus, arī nāvi, runājot par to kamerā.
Disociatīvā fūga. Sarunas par kino. Katru otro sestdienu, trijos.
And you are teaching also in university? You
yes.
are growing young generation of filmmakers. What you are teaching? Directing of documentary?
No, we never direct.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's a common mistake. No, I actually...
How are you telling this?
I call myself a director all the time, but I'm not directing anything. I just respond to what happens. So.
Uh-huh. Teach me how I have to say about my profession. I am not directing documentaries, but...
But you respond to to what's happening in front as you film, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for me, too.
Okay,
No, I call myself a filmmaker, not a director. If I have to call myself anything other than Ross McElwee, I mean, I call myself a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I went in college, at university, you asked me what I taught them to do. Basically, it's technical. How you get a decent image with a digital video camera, we're shooting digital video, and the whole notion of how to put people at ease so that you can film them in such a way that it'll be interesting to an audience that sees them, and then to have an idea as to what that story is and how you develop it. It's an awful lot to do with young people because you're asking them to surrender the kind of control that they've are so accustomed to having. It's that you're not allowed to script things in advance. You can't actually tell people what to do in these kinds of movies. You have to actually just observe their lives and then later on take the footage that you got from that and decide what in this is interesting and compelling so that you can compose or put together a short 10-minute documentary. So they make two or three short films in the introductory level and intermediate course, and then if they want to go on, make a longer film their last year in university, they can do that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think, what qualities or skills do you believe needs essential documentary filmmaker?
Oh, you have to be a good human being, and I don't mean good in a moral sense, but I just to be open and sort of willing to reach out and...
To be curious.
Curious, yes. You have to be curious. Curious about the world, curious about the people in the world and how they relate to whatever it is you're interested in and be able to film that. Curiosity is, I think, the central thing that you need as a documentary filmmaker. I'm sorry, I didn't understand your...
yeah, and what about you? Are there specific challenges you faced early in your career that you wish you had known before?
Hmm.
and navigate better?
No, I think I've done it all perfectly. I'm kidding. Of course, there are times when you second-guess yourself and you think, I wish I'd done something a little bit differently here or there. Times I've thought, I wish I made fiction films. I'm so tired of making these films where I don't really try to direct people. I wish that somehow I could use actors and simply make things happen the way I wish. I've thought about that a lot, especially as I get older. It becomes very, very hard to sort of invest the time with people in the real world and then try to make a documentary from it. And I think it's something you've got to have a lot of energy for and a lot of patience about. And, of course, what you have less and less of as you get older is patience and energy.
It is so, yeah. But when something, when your film isn't in the end like you, when you are not very happy about your film, how you overcome this?
Well, I've been fairly happy with all my films because I wouldn't release them if I weren't happy with them. I think, looking back, I could see I would do some things differently, but I think that's always true. No film is ever, for me anyway, is released and there are no regrets at all about the aesthetic commitment you make as a filmmaker, mm-hmm. editing and so forth.
In your opinion, how important is filmmaker find own special character, how he tells narration or style, special style?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. I think, you should try to do something that suits your own personality as a filmmaker. And it could be that's something experimental and interesting that hasn't been done before, but it doesn't have to be that. And I think it's mainly, again, going back to the whole notion of curiosity. If you find someone interesting enough to film, the curiosity will carry the film through to completion. And it doesn't really have much to do with style or, I think, coming up with a new way to do films. I did that when I was just beginning, but I don't think it's necessary for everybody who makes films to come up with a very different way of making a film. It's impossible, first of all. There have been so many films made, and they've all sort of flirted with different approaches to filmmaking. And I think if that's your goal, it's not going to be achievable, probably, as a filmmaker.
What for you is good film? When you come out from the movie and how you feel, and you can say, this was a good movie.
I don't know. I find myself, I do the strange thing every time I see a film I really like, I actually applaud. And I don't know exactly what triggers that, but it means for me something that really succeeded on its own terms. And I think that actual phrase is really important, its own terms and not anybody else's terms. I'm not feeling that the studio that released it is what created this film. I think it's the director and the actors, or if it's a documentary, the director and the people he or she managed to film, that's what counts, and that's what actually made the film work so well. But I find this very kind of primitive way of immediately responding to that is applause.
And do you think about your audience?
Not really, no. I mean, I think helps if they're humans. I don't think I'd have much luck if it were just goats or sheep or animals. But if you're a human being, I hope that you can relate to the stories that end up unfolding in my film, because they're kind of universal. I know a lot of people say that, but I think it all comes down to family, usually. And I think, my mother had a saying. She said, everything begins and ends with family. And I think that stays in the back of my mind. It's not like I make that my rule about filming, but it's there. It informs a lot of what I do.
Mēs neko nerežisējam, viņš man norāda. Es sevi nesaucu par režisoru, bet par filmu veidotāju. Es vēroju to, kas notiek kameras priekšā, esam atbildīgs par to, bet es neko neietekmēju. To es mācu arī saviem studentiem. Te ir ļoti daudz darba, jo viņiem ir grūti atteikties no kontrolēšanas. Viņiem šķiet, ka tā vajag darīt. Kā galveno īpašību, kas nepieciešama dokumentāristam, Ross min zinātkāru un pacietību. Un sarunas beigās piebilst. Manai mātei bija teiciens. Viņa teica, ka viss sākas un beidzas ar ģimeni. Un es domāju, ka tas kaut kur ir palicis manā prātā. Un tas lielā mērā nosaka to, ko es kino daru. Gan rīz piemirs pajautāt tik svarīgu lietu, ko režisors filmē tagad. Atcerējos tikai, kad bijām jau nonākuši pie viesnīcas, kur viņi ar dzīvesbiedri, režisori Hyun Kung Kim, bija apmetušies un tur šo jautājumu arī uzdeva. Viņš atbildēja šādi. Ļoti garlaicīgi, vienkārši mana dzīve. Strādāju pie jaunas filmas, filmēju savas dzīves ceturto nodaļu, kas ietver arī manu laulību ar manu brīnišķīgo sievu. Un bija piedāvājums no Hollywoods uzņemt izdomātu versiju par Shermana gājienu, un tā es veidoju dokumentālo filmu par izdomātu Shermana gājienu versiju. Tas bija raidījums disociatīvā fūga. Mans studijas viesis bija dokumentāro filmu režisors Ross McElvis, studijā bija Ieva Zoliņa.
Disociatīvā fūga. Sarunas par kino. Katru otro sestdienu trijos.